Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
We'll do another drunk stories again soon. Some of the drunk stories we hear, that enough, you look at it and you think, how are these people still alive? And then you hear about them nearly dying whilst attempting to play sport as well. You're like, it's just a calamity, isn't it?
It's it's a comedy of errors.
It is, mate. That.
I think I'm cute. I know I'm sexy. I've got the looks. The drives are cool. While I've got the mood. I said chill, up and down their spine. I'm just a sexy boy. I'm not your boy toy. I'm just a sexy boy.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever and whenever you may be listening. This is Chain Wrestling with Mags and Si. I am the slightly in pain because I'm incredibly unfit Si. And with me, as always, is the American badass to my dead man, the heartbreak kid to my Zoolander. They're both Ben Stiller films, okay? I'm not struggling for ideas this week. It's very clever when you think about it, all right? A podcaster who says he knows all about being in your house. He often is while you sleep. Mr. Mags, how are we doing this week, my friend?
Allegedly, I would like to add an allegedly to that. There is no evidence, and you can't prove any of it's all there. I'm in a weird mood, to be honest. I mean, we were literally just talking previously to recording, and yeah, I'm a bit baffled by this whole kind of European Super League. It's finding a little bit hard to process, but I got to. Watch some wrestling, and we'll get to have a bit of a chat about that. So yeah, it's a bit of a brief respite from that, I think.
Yeah, definitely. The whole European Super League thing, as like you said, we were talking just before we sort of pressed the red button. It's not something that at the moment looks like it'll be a positive thing for what they call the beautiful game. I adore football. My whole family adores football. It could potentially, you know, rip the heart out of the sport altogether, I suppose. But as we said before, Ann Mags, what can we do about it? It's all about the big money men. We don't get a say anymore, do we?
Correct. Absolutely correct. It's a sad state of affairs. But as in every aspect of life, money over everything. So. Mm-hmm. It's something we'll essentially have to deal with it. Even if we don't like it, it's going to happen because the clubs have all the cards.
Very much so. Very much so. Speaking of football then, I obviously said at the very beginning in the little intro we do there that I'm in pain because I'm incredibly unfit. I started my new job this week, Mags.
Ah.
Or last week, sorry. I started on the Wednesday. But I made a huge, huge judgment error, a huge mistake. I went for a kick around with my middle daughter who plays football for a couple of different teams. She's played for the school, she's played for the city and so on. Her season is starting back up again. Now lockdowns are being eased. And she asked me to go along and have a little kick around with her over the field just to make sure she knows. Knock off a bit of rest, I guess. I don't know. I went over there, felt pretty good at the time. I don't know if I'd not drank as much the night before. I felt a bit sprightly, Mags. And I acted like I was, I suppose, maybe 20 years old again. Sadly, when I woke up the following morning from my first day at my new job, I felt more like I was 80 years old. My ankle was like the size of a balloon or a rugby ball or something. My back was killing me. And I spent the whole of the second half of my first day at work with literally everybody I know there now, my new colleagues, saying to me, hey, are you all right, mate? Because I was walking around like, I don't know, like some sort of mangled up old man with my foot dragging behind me.
Yeah. The bells.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly like that. Exactly like that. So that was not a good judgment call. And the thing is as well, you know, it's quite humbling as well, to be fair, when your 14-year-old daughter is already a much, much better player than you ever were, you know, let alone now. You know, it's... So the fact that I've crippled myself the day before my new start date for my new job is quite the error, I think, quite the you know, bad judgment on my part. It went okay though, mate. You know, it's similar to what I was doing before. It's only part time at the moment, so it doesn't massively affect the income into the house, but it's a foot in the door. So yeah, it went okay, bud. It went okay. How's your week been, my friend?
Yeah, not too bad. We've had some rather clement weather, so we've spent a lot of it in the garden. We had some fun UFC and Triller events this week. I don't know if you were a hit with the kids or not, sir, but Jake Paul, YouTube sensation, I would assume, he had a, I want to say, boxing match. It wasn't really a boxing match, but... Yeah, I ended up watching that card, which was it was entertaining, but for pretty much all the wrong reasons. And then today we've had our electric car charging port fitted. I mean, we signed up for the car a while ago, but obviously with it being a new car, it takes a while to be delivered. But it's feeling real now. That we're making the switch. We're getting a little bit kind of nervous about switching away from petrol because obviously you're used to it. And the fact that we're now going to have a electric, yeah, it's going to be new and different and kind of exciting, but also quite worrying that we'll need to have a shed load of AA batteries to get on if we're stranded somewhere.
Yeah. See, I wasn't actually going to talk about this because I mentioned my stupid cat fairly often on the show. Everyone's fully aware of how dumb Lemmy can be.
The cat immunity centre.
But, yeah. But
next to the no dogs allowed sign.
Yeah, that, just sat there.
That was brilliant. That's an awesome shit, picture.
He doesn't give a shit. But I don't think we could have an electric car here, me and my lady, my wife here, purely because of Lemmy. Today and yesterday, basically I'm in the house and yesterday there was the beeping of the horn and the revving of the engine brought me out the front of the house. Today it was literally just shouting from my wife. So on both occasions I've got up, looked out the window. She's half sort of, we've got a little driveway. It just fits the car on outside the front of our house. Right. Mm-hmm. And she's half in the driveway, my wife in the car. And the other half, the ass end of the car is sticking out across the pavement and still hanging into the road a little bit. And I'm like, well, what the bloody hell is she playing at? What's she doing? And on both occasions, apparently what's happened, I haven't seen this. This is what the wife explains to me because she's the one driving down the road. She comes around the corner in our little blue car and she sees Lemmy just sort of milling around on the pavement or wherever. And as soon as he clocks that it's our car, he sprints down the pavement. You know, because I'm guessing he's excited. He knows my wife Sharon is coming home, so he's excited to see her. You know, it's quite funny because our other cat doesn't recognise our car. He recognises Sharon's mum's car and gets excited when he sees that one. It's weird how they work, I guess. But Lemmy runs down the pavement, runs into the driveway, but doesn't go all the way in to the house. He literally stops in the middle of the driveway and sits down. So the wife will drive in. She then can't see him, but she knows he's in the driveway. And she's beeping the horn and shouting at him to try and get the bloody cat to move. But he just literally sits there blocking the driveway and won't let the car in. You know, I think if we had an electric car and it was too quiet, God knows what would happen to him. You know,
because that is actually a good point because there's not really a lot of moving parts to an electric car.
No.
And there's certainly no kind of like engine kind of grunting. So yeah, that'd be interesting. I think that'd be weird. Being in a car and not hearing the revving of the engine and just essentially hearing the whirring of an electric motor. Yeah, that would be weird.
On Demolition Man.
Yeah.
Demolition Man, when they're driving around in those cars and all you can hear is that real sort of faint buzz.
Yeah, as long as I won't have to wipe my arse with three shells, I'm not that bothered.
No, you don't have to do it. You just have a rant like I did last week. And then every time you say pimple dick, that machine chucks out a thing like, you know, you've been found guilty.
You are fined 5 credits.
Yeah, that's it. Like old Sly Stallone did, old Rambo himself used the credits and the fines, didn't he, to wipe his arse?
Certainly did.
Triller. I had never, ever heard of this until this week when this YouTube fella did this thing. I got no idea what it's about, what happened. I mean, to be honest, you say Triller, I just thought that was what people in Ireland call the Michael Jackson album. That was as far as my knowledge went.
I have used that joke so many times this week, it's unreal.
So what is it? Is it like a boxing company? Is it a promotion?
Triller it started as a kind of an alternative to TikTok, you know, like the short form video social media style app.
Okay, yeah.
And that expanded to something called Triller Fight Club, which is essentially famous YouTubers and social influencers setting up a kind of like a white collar boxing club. But as more money's come in and more people have got involved, more and more famous people have wanted to start boxing. So we've got to where the biggest social media influencers like KSI and Jake Paul are all having these boxing matches. So Triller have grown because of the revenue. They've grown to a point where they actually have agreed a deal to buy out Fight.tv, like lock, stock and barrel. So they essentially own the biggest independent combat sports and wrestling streaming service in the world.
But as in Fight, as in where I buy my AEW pay-per-views from?
Yeah, Fight.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So that deal will be going through in the upcoming weeks. But essentially this card was it's so hard to explain. It was meant to be a combat sports showcase, but it quickly devolved into a mini concert / comedy / pretend farting / rich people getting paid to finesse a company like Triller. It was surreal. It was honestly, honestly surreal. It started off with some pretty decent action with some not so well-known boxers, but kind of like up-and-coming names. Then once we get to the main card, you have which was the first fight? You had a comedian called Pete Davidson. I don't know if you know him. He's from Saturday Night Live.
No.
He was like the kind of like the host of the show, like the compere for the show. He absolutely tore the full show a new arsehole every opportunity he could get. He called it pathetic. He called Jake Paul a douchebag who should be locked up. He said he's only there because the check's cleared. He ripped it down. So he ended up being in a segment with Ric Flair.
Right, okay.
Where they hosted a slap fight.
Right.
Just let that sink in. Two big, chubby, bearded blokes slapping each other. Then we got to some music. So we had Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, and forgive me, but two other rappers who I don't know who they are, doing like a 4 or 5 song concert. Apparently they're bringing out like a collaborative album called Mount Westwood or something like that. So that happened. Then we got to Frank Mir, former UFC heavyweight champion, looking not the best in shape. He came in 70 pounds heavier than his opponent, who was a former world champion boxer who hadn't boxed for 5 years or something like that. And fair play to Frank Mir. He was tired after a minute of the fight, but he gave his all. And fair play to the fighter, Steve Cunningham, I think his name was. He could have hurt Frank Mir. He could have really damaged him, but he did enough to win the fight without really kind of destroying Frank Mir. So that happened. That was 6 rounds of fun. Uh-huh. So then after that, we get another concert with a I assume she's a young rap artist called Doja Cat. Never heard of her. She pretty much sang and rapped in her underwear, and it was very, very small underwear. She left nothing to the imagination, which, girl power and all that lot, fair play to her. that happened. Then we got, before that, I've actually missed a bit out. In the Frank Mir and Steve Cunningham fight, they had Oscar De La Hoya on commentary. So they had this they had this six-man commentary booth. The majority of the people, yeah, six men. The majority of the people, I have no idea who they are, but on this one fight, they had Oscar De La Hoya. And this is not allegedly or hyperbole. That guy was off his fucking tree on cocaine. He was gurning. He was just screaming, making absolutely no sense. He was just off his tree. So he got switched out, whether he went to get another line or not and just didn't bother coming back. No idea. But we get to the next fight, which is another up-and-coming, not an up-and-coming boxer, actually, a former world champion who's quite a good fighter called Regis Progre, and he was fighting a guy called...
Cyril Regis, no?
No, definitely not Cyril Regis. Right. I mean, you can put that in the title if you want. But he was fighting a guy called Ivan Redback, or Redcatch, something like that, another kind of up-and-coming fighter. And he was getting handily paced by this Regis guy. And then Regis went for kind of like a liver shot or like a shot to the bread basket. He overstretched and missed where he was trying to hit, but his glove kind of like grazed against like the waist, I suppose, of this Ivan Redback. The guy went down like he had been kicked in the dick, right? So the referee was like, is this a disqualification? Was it a low blow? So we get the replays and slow motion replays, and it shows that no contact at all came from Regis to this guy, apart from the glove, the thumb of the glove slightly grazing his hip. But the guy stayed down as if he'd been punched in the dick, and they ended up getting a stretcher and stretching him out of the building because he simulated being hit in the dick so much. So that happened.
I don't understand why though.
Because he was getting beat, and it was an attempt to, I suppose, not lose.
Perhaps he's got a really sensitive hip, so Max. Perhaps he's just like, you know, he needs one replaced or something.
That may have been the case, but he was holding his dick. He was holding his dick and balls.
Perhaps he's got a really sensitive dick.
so sensitive that you don't even have to make contact with it.
Just a gust of wind from the guy's hand, you know? Just like effectively waving vigorously, and it's like, you know.
Perhaps.
Ivor Redback or whatever his freaking name was, he then collapses and was always streaming because he's been, his plums have been waved out or something. I don't know.
I mean, that may be the case, but I know the commentary team who had replaced Oscar De La Hoya with Snoop Dogg. We're absolutely ripping the piss out of him.
That's fantastic. So they replaced someone off their tits on coke with someone who's probably off their tits on weed.
Not probably, because he spent a lot of the show actually rolling joints whilst on the commentary team. Honestly, it beggars belief. You need to see this to believe it. So we get into the I want to say core main event, which is a Justin Bieber concert.
God,
absolutely nobody. So we get four or five Justin Bieber songs, and in between every song, he's trying to like bull up the crowd, saying how are we doing, how are we enjoying the night, to absolute crickets. Not one person says anything to him. They also have like a laser beam show, which are pretty much blinds everyone because it fires straight down at the camera. So there's plenty of times when you are just bombarded by a bright green laser, which is fun for all the family. Then we get to the actual main event. So we have Jake Paul, YouTube sensation, against Ben Askren, former MMA fighter, elite college level wrestler, but someone very much not known for their boxing abilities. So whenever he's been in an MMA fight, it usually goes to the ground. He usually kind of wrestles and wins by submission. He's also coming off a full hip replacement that happened in October, so less than 6 months after that. So it's not
he's
like
got a sensitive hip.
He's got a metal hip. I'd say it's very much unsensitive. It's
unsensitive hip. He's got an unsensitive hip. Why?
So this fight starts, and within about 2 minutes, Jake Paul has hit Ben Askren and knocked him to the floor. He gets back up. The referee asks him if he's all right to fight. Ben Askren says, "Yeah, I'm fine." But the referee then calls it off anyway. So Jake Paul is still unbeaten as a professional boxer with a 3-0 record. His cronies have finessed Triller out of millions and millions of dollars for an absolute joke of a show. Essentially.
We should do something like that, mate. We should just try and put our own boxing show, our own wrestling show on or something, just to make a few quid, you know. We could be quite creative, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. You've got a sore ankle, so we'll just put a robotic ankle on and you just take a couple of shots off a famous YouTuber and we're quids in.
Why have I got to get punched?
Well, after you basically sold me down the river on your recent appearance on Good Cop, Bad Cop, I believe you owe me that.
What, sold you down the river? How did I sell you down the river, mate? Come on. What are you upset about? What are you salty about?
I'm not really. I thought it was a really good episode. You really kind of like made a good showing of yourself, and then you still wouldn't confirm that you are the wife in this relationship, which is
I don't understand why either of us have got to be the wife, can't we? Just I don't understand why we're even talking about this. We're not married. Oh, for goodness sake.
I listened to the episode today. It was seemed like you had a lot of fun on there.
It's always a great show anyway, isn't it? Good Cop, Bad Cop. And Matt's a top bloke. I've got a lot of time for him. And that's the first time I've really spoken with Graham, and he seems a lovely fella as well. So I really enjoyed being on there. It was really, really good fun. And thank you both to the pair of them for having me on. Like.
And what really kind of like it gave me a massive beaming smile was when Graham said that our chemistry has made Chain Wrestling one of his favourite podcasts. And this is from a guy who listens to probably as many podcasts as I do. So to get that level of praise from one of our teammates is amazing. And yeah, really, it made me more proud of the work we do on this show. One thing I was surprised at was actually how humble you ended up being, because what people don't know about this show is you do the majority of the work. I literally just watch a bit of wrestling, turn up and have a bit of banter. It's you what does a lot of the controlling where the conversation goes, dealing with the Twitter stuff and that. But so you need to give yourself way more props than you do. I'm just along for the ride. I'm literally just hanging on your coattails.
Well, no, that's very kind of you to say, mate. But it wouldn't work without you. It wouldn't work without the pair of us. So yeah, from that viewpoint, it's it is what it is. I mean, I enjoy what I'm doing. It's great, and I'm really happy that we're doing this together. And it wouldn't work either without our wonderful, wonderful listeners and Twitter followers.
Look at that for a segue. Listeners, how I've led him into that, and he knew. It's just like an instinctual thing now. He knew what I was the aim. I weren't really praising him. I was just setting him up for that segue.
It's that chemistry that Graham was talking about. He's at now on the air, doesn't he? Hey, I'll go get that as well. I'm going to put Graham endorsed on our logo. Actually, very quickly, Mags, before we get on to Twitter today and our listeners' sporting stories or disasters or whatever, very quickly, I'm going to spell a word for you now, right? I don't know if you want to write this down so you can see it in front of you or whatever, but I'm going to spell a word for you now that apparently I've been saying wrong my whole life, and I only found out about an hour before we pressed record. Okay. That I've been saying this wrong, right? Chipotle. How do you say that?
Chipotle.
Shit.
What have you been calling it?
For like my whole life, man. Like literally my whole life, I've been saying Chipotle.
To other people or just to like your inner circle.
To whenever it comes up.
Like in a restaurant. Ooh,
I don't really go to restaurants, man, but it's like the reason it came up was because I bought some crisps today when I picked Charlie up from school, my youngest. I picked her up from school, popped to the shop on the way home, and they had these two new flavours of crisps, and I thought, well, I'll get them. They're only a quid for a multi-pack. I'll get them for the kids to try and whatever. And this one of them was this Chipotle flavoured crisps. So I started eating them, and I said to the wife, these were all right, these. And I said what I thought they were called. And she was like, what did you just say? I said, the Chipotle flavour. And she was like, no, what did you just say? And I said, that's what they are, they're Chipotle flavour. And my wife was like, just laughing her head off. And as this is happening, I think she's winding me up, because I am adamant that I've never heard it said any other way. I swear I haven't, because I'd have picked up on it. I thought that's how you said that word. So I think she's winding me up. Then my middle daughter comes down the stairs, halfway through the conversation, stops and just stares at me with a look of complete disappointment and says, no, that's not how you say it, and agreed with the wife. So I'm like, I'm 40 years of age, and I've been saying this wrong my whole life.
Next week you're doing the show on your own. I can't work with somebody that says Chipotle.
I think if you look at it, that's kind of how it's spelled, isn't it? Chip, ot.
Okay, so I've got a similar situation, not from me, but from Mrs. Maggs. What do you call the kind of dried petals and bits of wood that's been perfumed and dyed, and you put it in a bowl on your coffee table? What do you call that?
I don't want to say because you're going to laugh at me.
What do you call it?
Well, isn't it potpourri? It's supposed to be pronounced.
Yeah, potpourri.
Well, I've always called it potpourri.
The wife calls it that, and she's adamant it's called potpourri. And she, even when she goes and buys it, she refers to it as potpourri, and I cringe my teeth out when she does it. It's horrible, and I've told her countless times that it's potpourri, but no, it's potpourri, and that is it.
In theory, potpourri is like a little jar of tomato sauce, isn't it? In theory, couldn't it?
Yeah,
you know.
And I've got another similar one that she says, peas, like garden peas.
I'm aware of the existence of peas, Mags. Yep.
Yeah. So, what do you call the really small peas that you usually get like frozen?
Right, I think my daughter is going to say the same thing as your good lady. They're supposed to be called, isn't it, petit pois?
Petit pois, yep.
Our Livs calls them petite pois.
Oh, my missus doesn't even do that. She calls them petite peas.
Okay. Well, in a way, you know, she's not wrong, because they are peas.
They're very petite.
Yeah, and they're really small. So in a way, maybe she's not just getting the words wrong. Perhaps that's just what she calls them, because she's really descriptive with her words. And maybe she's calling it exactly what they are.
I mean, you may be right, but potpourri is a sin in my eyes.
Chipotle.
I can't get over that. Chipotle.
Hey, honestly, I could get my
memes
head around
about the company Chipotle. Like a kid who's like loves going out and eating at Chipotle, and this video's been going, oh, Chipotle is my life. How did you not know that Chipotle was the... Why would you think it's Chipotle? of all things.
I've never seen those videos. I don't know what that is. I don't know what you're talking about there. But I didn't even know until I Googled it that Chipotle was...
Chipotle. Oh,
I didn't even know until I Googled it earlier that it's like a chain of places you go and eat, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like Mexican food.
Yeah, right, okay. I didn't know that until today. I thought it was just like a type of flavour. So, like, you get... I didn't realise Chipotle was a chain of restaurants. I thought it was just chipotle flavour. So it was chipotle ketchup or chipotle chicken or something. I didn't realise it was a chain of restaurants where people go and eat until literally today.
It's not just a chain of restaurants. It's actually a type of pepper. That's the whole point. It's a dried jalapeno. I think that's what a chipotle is called. Don't quote me on that, but I know it's a dried pepper of some variety, and the company obviously used that as their logo and their name, and that's how it was. But I'm sure it wasn't called a chipotle chili. 100% sure.
See, honestly, it blew my mind finding this out earlier, to the point where, like I said, I Googled it, found out it was actually a restaurant. That the chain is named after it, like, and then there was a thing you could press on the Google, and I literally typed in "how do you pronounce," and I wrote out "chipotle," right?
It is Chipotle, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, basically, and I was just like, huh. Honestly, it blew my mind. It was insane. I see, you learn something every day, mate. 40 years of age, and every day is still a school day, you know.
That's made my day. That really has made my day. That's brilliant.
Oh, shall we move on to other people doing silly things and hurting themselves or whatever?
Yes, let's.
Okie doke. On Twitter this week, our wonderful, wonderful listeners and followers got in touch to provide their, I suppose, the initial idea was going to be football, sport in general, sporting triumphs and disasters.
Yeah.
That was the initial idea that I sort of messaged Mags with and said, what do you reckon to this? I'm not going to lie, because Twitter only allows a certain number of characters, it ended up just going to sporting disasters because I couldn't fit the word triumphs in. So maybe that's one for another day. We had quite a good reaction and number of responses. Again, Mags, the people listening to our show are, as always, absolutely fantastic. I will just run through them again in the order they arrived, if that's okay with you, Bird.
That's absolutely fine. And I like the way it's the same or some of the same faces that have these issues. I think they need to take a cold, hard look at their lives and realize that they are lucky to still be on this earth.
Yeah.
With some of them.
Yeah, the fact that we'll do another drunk stories again soon. It's guaranteed to come up again, isn't it?
Yeah, but definitely.
Some of the drunk stories we hear, that enough, you look at it and you think, how are these people still alive? And then you hear about them nearly dying whilst attempting to play sport as well. You're like, it's just a calamity, isn't it? It's but anyway.
It's a comedy of errors. It is, mate.
Our good friend Young Conrad at EL Compact 2 Newt on Twitter. He said he was about 7 at school and he was trying to do sort of clever step overs like you do in football, like Ronaldo and so on, all the clever little tricks. He fell over on the concrete and broke his arm. So, yeah, that's not a successful venture, is it really?
That's definitely a disaster.
Dan Griffin, it's not an episode of chain wrestling if we don't get a story from our buddy Dan.
Yes, exactly.
At Dan Griffin 21 on Twitter, he said in his first school rugby game in year 7, so that would be around 11, 12 years old, I would think, if people are unfamiliar with how the years are split up in the UK. Mm-hmm. The year 11s were playing on the main pitch, so that would be more like 16, 17-year-olds, next to his game. One of the players wrapped his knee around the post, shattering his kneecap. Ooh, stroof. The ambulance that came for him tried to drive onto the school field to come and see him and sort him out, obviously. It actually got stuck on the field. This poor kid was howling in pain while a paramedic, youth rugby players, PE teachers, and the kid's dad tried to free the ambulance for a good 20 to 30 minutes. When the ambulance got three, they decided to drive off the field and just ran on with a stretcher instead. Man, can you imagine the pain that kid must have been in?
And being left there for the best part of half an hour whilst they try and free the ambulance. Oh, that's brutal. That's horrible.
I couldn't even imagine, man, the pain of that. It's true. At UTT Rob, have you listened to the new podcast, Max? The UTT show?
What's it called?
Unbooking the Territory, isn't it?
I've also been had the pleasure of being on a couple of episodes so far. They've pre-recorded and are in the can.
I think you mentioned that before, actually, yeah.
Whether they see the light of day is another thing. But, I think it's a really interesting take on creating content.
Yeah, I've listened to the first two, I think, so far. Definitely the first one. I think I've either finished or halfway through the second one. I've enjoyed it so far. Yeah, it's quite good. I'm getting into it. Rob says, when he was on the school swimming team, there was a mix-up when finishing his length, and the next guy in the school relay was starting his, causing their school to finish a whole length behind the seven other schools. Their team got a slow clap during that length. I mean, that's bad, isn't it? When like everyone else is watching. I mean, you know, I was never particularly athletic or anything like that when I was very little. I played sport more when I got a bit older. But that moment when you're sort of swimming or running or whatever, and you are literally trailing behind for whatever reason, a mistake or whatever, and everyone's giving you that sort of clap or come on, well done, and all this sort of stuff. They mean well, but deep down, it feels a little bit like crap, doesn't it?
90% of them don't mean well. 90% of them are doing it to absolutely mock the shit out of you. And that last person doing that last length must have felt lad, he wanted the world to swallow him up.
Yeah. At Von Tugbot, our good buddy from Bang Bang Podcast here.
I mean, to be fair, he slated, he didn't slate me, but he refused point blank to answer my question on the latest episode and just gave a giant sigh, which I thought was hilarious and disturbing all at once.
I've not listened to this week's Bang Bang yet. Obviously, being out on a Monday, it's after, as I've said before, it's after we record this that I sit down and listen back to this and then listen to Bang Bang and so on. So I look forward to that.
It's my favourite episode that they've done so far.
Yeah?
Yeah, really good.
I really enjoyed the Terry Funk episodes, the double header, sort of split over two. The Terry Funk episodes were great. I really enjoyed that.
This one is Steve at his most despondent.
Okay.
Because he starts off so invested. I mean, I'm not going to go over all the details, but they talk for about 45 minutes or so about music, and you can tell he absolutely loves it. Some really cool stories. And then he gets onto the wrestling and it just dive bombs, just absolutely dive bombs. And by the end of it, everyone's a C word to him.
Fantastic. He says, you're going to have to help me a little bit here, Mags, I think, because, I mean, I don't know the first thing about cricket, so I'm kind of hoping that you do.
Okay.
He's messaged in saying, I used to play cricket for a pub team. 6 points a cider in, and my six overs bowling produced figures of 5 to 21. I don't really know what that means.
Right, so he got 5 wickets out in and for 21 runs.
So that's quite good, isn't it?
It's not bad to say we're half caught.
Yeah. And then fielding at first slip, misjudged a nick and it fractured his collarbone. However, he didn't spill a drop of his pint. Legendary.
He was fielding in the slips. So the slips are, I assume you've seen some sort of cricket before.
Yeah. I played it at school. I was just awful at it. And I was like, when I played cricket at school, I used to always request, you know, can I go and field right out by boundary, the little flags? On a field right out there. So then I'd stick my 10 Lambert and Butler in my sock, and I'd be able to go out and have a smoke during PE and no one would notice. That was my interactions with cricket, mate.
Okay, so for people who don't know, basically the slips are they stand close to the wicket keeper. So if the batsman nicks the ball and doesn't quite make contact with it and it deflects, it goes in their general direction. So they're basically in the firing line for a lot of kind of missed shots from cricket. So it's a dangerous spot to be in. So for him to be able to be in the slips and still be supping on a pan is brilliant in the first place. But to not spill after breaking your collarbone, but yeah, the guy's a legend. Absolute legend.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Because, I mean, sometimes these bowlers, and when the batsman's hit it as well, it's going like, I'm assuming, over 100 miles an hour.
I mean, some of them, I mean, not at that level, but certainly at professional level, you get past 100 miles an hour, yeah.
And they're like pebbles, aren't they? They're like bloody rocks, cricket balls. They're rock hard, aren't they?
They're solid, yeah, absolutely yeah. Solid.
Oh, just sort of to clear up as well, 10 Namber and Butler in my pocket. Other cigarettes are also available out there, kids, okay? But don't smoke.
Don't smoke them.
All right. Millwall Chris, at Millwall Chris 1 on Twitter, a few years ago decided to run the parents' race at his daughter's sports day. He also worked at the school he's put here in brackets. On the start line, he noticed that most of the dads are about 10 to 15 years younger than him. Thought if he could make a decent start, it might be all right. He went two steps, fell on his face in front of the whole school, just laid there and waited for the ground to swallow him up. Fortunately, another member of staff gave him emergency resuscitation.
Wow.
Oh, amazing stuff. A couple of other messages here that are school orientated. A few years ago, a mum was running in the mum's race and she had recently had a baby. Wearing a maxi dress and she was approaching the finishing line, one of her boobs came out, which is interesting, I guess. And also took a group of kids to a swimming competition. Two of them nearly drowned as they couldn't actually swim. Their parents had signed letters saying they could swim. And when the individual who sent this in asked one of the parents who told you that your kid could swim, they said she did, as in the child told them.
So the child said, yep, I can do it. The child who wants to go in this competition but has no experience of swimming said, yeah, I can do it. And they didn't think, I might fact check that. That may be something that needs kind of like outside approval. Did the social services get involved? Because maybe they should have.
Yeah, potentially. Craig William from the excellent Pro Wrestling Musings site.
Absolutely.
He messages in here, speaking from experience, he says, that thing where you wind up to kick the ball super, super hard, but your standing foot hits the ball a little bit, making you completely miss the ball with your kicking leg, is always super embarrassing. And yes, it is. And sometimes it can be really painful because you jar your own knee, don't you?
Yep, absolutely. Or when you're playing football and the ball comes to you and you try and take a shot and you absolutely sky it, or you kick it off for a throw-in and you have to pretend that you injured yourself, otherwise you'd look like an absolute buffoon. So you're like, I caught it wrong.
I used to just look at the ground.
Swallow me now.
I played football quite a bit at school and for different teams in my youth, and I played up until, I don't know, mid to late 20s. Not a great standard or anything like that. I mean, I believe it or not, to look at me now, you wouldn't think I was telling the truth, but back then I was actually quite trim, and all I could do was run really, really fast. So I'd miss like 15 chances a game because everyone would chuck me up front because I was quick. I'd miss like 15 chances a game, but still get another 4 or 5 goals because I was that quick. I got that many chances. Yeah. I weren't very good. I was just lightning until I smashed my knee up. Like, and if I missed, that was the standard. I'd look at the pitch and be like looking at a divot that wasn't actually there or whatever. Blame that I can't play on a surface like this. It'd be, yeah, that's all. At Hazza Chelsea FC, Harry messaging in, says, yes. It was Will and Kate's royal wedding. We had a street party, and like a dumbass, I was practicing three kicks in our concrete driveway into the street bins. There was a steep concrete ramp to get onto the drive, and he would run up it, but he tripped and took a massive chunk out of his knee.
Oh,
I mean, he's still got the scarring from it, he says.
Concrete drives are not smooth as well. They're pretty rough. I've been out bringing the bins in many a time and thought, yeah, I'll chance it with no shoes on. And, yeah, they can cut your feet up somewhat rotten, but to fall on it and gash your knee, yeah, I bet that was horrific.
Yeah. At the Appliance 180, William Kitchen, top bloke. He says, first day back at secondary school, the day after SummerSlam 99. I love the way that, as wrestling fans, we don't always associate years or days or anything. Like we say, it was SummerSlam 99 the day before. Yeah. That's how I remember when it was. You know, it's like my dad, he's a driving instructor and he's been a truck driver and all, because he spent his whole life driving. He gets embarrassed because he'll say to me, oh, such and such a place. I'll have no idea. He's got a name the nearest pub and I'll know exactly where he is. And it's that sort of thing, isn't it? It's what you sort of associate with, I guess. Yeah. It's, he says here that they were playing football. He went across the ball in from the right-hand side, got caught in a bad tackle, ended up being a triple fracture. Wow. 2 months off school, could never play football to a decent standard again, leg never healed, and he still has a permanent limp. So, why? Oh, okay, that's terrible.
That is brutal. Yeah. Wow, I mean, you've really took the comedy out of that one. So
yeah, that's
thanks for that. Movie,
wasn't it? I was really pissed on our chips. We have a message from Graham at MGB Graham. So he doesn't know about a screw up particularly, but certainly an injury as he pulled his Achilles tendon in sports day mid race. Was unable to finish the race. He was about 10 years old. Terrible injury. No running around. And at that age, over the summer as well. So that's another one that's a bit depressing. It's a bit of a shame, isn't it?
Yeah. Wow.
Not good. Good bad wrestle at good cop, bad cop.
Now this will either be Graham again or it'll be Matt.
He says here, in adult life as a soccer coach about 10 years ago, was warming his goalkeeper up pre-match, stepped backwards to get another ball, badly sprained his ankle in a big divot, was lying in agony and had to be assisted by a trainer, sat the whole match with his ankle strapped up. Oh dear. That's bad when you're that injured just during the warm-up and you're not even playing. You're literally warming somebody else up.
I mean, it was never meant to be a sportsman then, I would assume.
Carry on with the podcasting, pal. That's the better option, I think. Safer as well, I think.
Yeah.
At Handy T1TF, a good friend of the show, Handy, it says here, in sixth grade, he was 265 pounds, so much bigger than now he has put. When playing football, he felt unstoppable. I'm assuming this, well, I know Handy is in the States, so it's American football we're talking here. Felt unstoppable until he caught a pass over the middle and was suddenly sandwiched between two 300-pound guys at full speed. So he woke up an hour later and actually lost the game. So he just got absolutely splatted by two massive fellas, man. And it's amazing when you watch some of that NFL and I suppose rugby as well in this country and so on. Some of the hits these people take is insane. Just absolute smashes, isn't it?
Yeah, mental.
Yeah. And the last one from Twitter, Danny at Scottish Juggalo on Twitter says, school sports day 2004 was on the final lap of an 800 meter race. Failing miserably in last place, the second to last runner suddenly had a violent asthma attack out of nowhere and keeled over. Instead of helping him, I ran past him to secure not getting last place.
I mean, reading it sounded absolutely brutal. But being in the same situation, I think I would have done that.
Oh, 100%, mate. 100%. Sod that. I mean, end of the day, it's a school sports day. The teachers are there to sort that shit out. Finish the race, man. Come on. Unless you've got an inhaler in your sock next to your Lamberts, just, you know.
Yeah, what are you going to be able to do?
Yeah. I got a couple of quick ones, Mags. There was a really embarrassing moment when I was playing under 16s football. We were playing against our local rivals. Like I said, I was normally, I played up top. My goal record, in theory, looked quite good. But when you looked at how many chances I missed, it did not. But luckily, those weren't counted. We were playing a game and we were actually 3-0 down at half time. My strike partner, who was one of my best friends, I still see him quite regularly now, scored 3 goals in the second half to put it back to 3 each. And then in stoppage time, I went running into the box, took the ball around the keeper, got brought down. We were given a penalty. I'd missed a bag full of chances that game. My strike partner obviously had scored an absolute hat-trick of worldies as well, 25, 30 yards out and all this sort of stuff. He was saying that he should take the penalty. I was like, nope, I am the designated penalty taker. I wanted the glory for myself. Stood up, walked up, put the ball down, took a couple of steps back, puffed my chest out, acting all Billy Big Balls, promptly knocked it straight over the bar. Like an absolute dick. And as the ball kept sailing away, before it even bounced, the ref blew the final whistle. So that was quite a shameful, embarrassing moment for me.
Oh, that's brutal.
Another one that is more daft, I suppose, was a similar sort of age, 16-ish, on a school sports day. I was doing the 800 metres and the 1500 metres. I did the 1500, went off, wandered off, got a drink, they used to have like an ice cream truck that would come around as well, so I went and got an ice cream, came back, and I stood next to a couple of people in my class watching this race going round. And I recognised some of the people running from being in my year. I sort of said to my buddy Matt, oh, what race is this? And he said, oh, this is the 800 metres for our year. I was like, all right, so my race then. So I basically missed my race because I'd gone to get an ice cream. So that I was frowned upon there by my head of year and stuff. Have you got any at all, mate?
I've got a couple. One that I think I've mentioned on the show before, but I was quite good at cricket in my school days. So whenever it was cricket time for P, it was one of the best times of the school year for me. So going out onto the cricket field and one of the other kids, a guy called Mark Bailey, and I'll never ever forgive him as long as I shall live. He cracked a cricket ball into the nearby golf course, which meant we all ended up having to do lengths of the cross country field because of him rather than playing cricket. So there's that. That was fun. Then in a cricket match I was having for school. Kind of similar to Steve's one, but he's stole my thunder with the fact he was half cut and broke his collarbone. I went to catch the ball, but as you said earlier, the balls are rock hard, really solid, and it kind of, instead of landing clean in my palms, it landed kind of on like the ball of my thumb. Ooh. Bounced up and hit me directly in the mouth. Which I don't know if you've been hit with a cricket ball in the mouth, but there's only one winner. Yeah. And that winner was the cricket ball, and my top lip just exploded, literally like I'd eaten a firework. It was an absolute mess. But then probably the most painful one, and I think it needs a little bit of context to why it happened. So I'm going to go back a few more years. This is like when I was about 9 or 10, I got hit by a car, and what happened, the car kind of dragged my leg underneath the wheel and kind of really rolled over the leg and over the knee. So it was absolutely just dismantled. So I spent a good year, 18 months in kind of like rehabbing traction and having a plaster cast on to kind of rebuild the leg. But there's only so much around that time that you could do. So I've always had a right leg that's built on hopes and dreams and kind of like held together with gaffer tape. Then fast forward about 3-4 years, I was on a swing on a park, and at that age you think that you are King Dick. So I'm there, stood on this wing, trying to like go as high as I can. This local woman shouted over, said, "Oi, don't stand on that swing." So me panicking because I've suddenly been emasculated in front of my mates. I went to sit down on the swing so I didn't get into any trouble, but the swing was really low to the ground, to the point where my leg went under the swing and then it kind of like snapped. Mm. It essentially went 90 degrees the wrong way. Now, if you anyone who has a knee, which I would assume is everybody who listens, knows that the knee bends 90 degrees in one direction. Well, imagine that, but my knee bending the other way. So that happened. Jesus. To the same leg. For that, I was in a Forrest Gump style brace for again about 18 months. So safe to say my knee was not in the best of shape. Anyway, that didn't hold me back from being fairly decent at some sports. There were times when I struggled because the pain was pretty much unbearable, and I really still suffer with it a lot now. But I was good at cricket. But I got involved in the school football team. So one time we were kind of doing practice, and we were like picking kind of shirts and skin style sides for a match, a training match. I gets picked, goes to jog over to join my teammates, and that's one time that my knee decided, yeah, we're not playing ball now. I feel like having a bit of a nap, and it just gave in. My essentially the joint came loose. My bottom part of my leg was all wobbly like a jelly, and yeah, so I didn't get it. And that was literally from jogging from a group of lads to another group of lads. No fouls, no tackles, didn't get to kick a ball, and yeah, I was out of action for about 2 to 3 months because of that. So yeah, that's fun. That's sorry about that.
Yeah, you're just like your one knee is just made of Weetabix, you know.
That's pretty much the best way to describe it. And even now, like in my early 40s, it can be absolutely fine, but you get a cold day and it's unbearable. It's absolutely, it just stiffens up. And then we can, me and the missus can be out in town, or we can be on a pub crawl, anything like that. And for no reason at all, it can just decide, yeah, I don't feel like letting you walk on me anymore. Wobble, wobble.
Why?
Yeah.
I start trouble with my back a little bit, to be fair, from an old football injury.
It's mad how the things that you do as kids, you think you're indestructible, but then you look back and think it was that particular moment that has caused me this amount of pain for years.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, mine was, I actually slipped two discs in my back, right down the bottom of my back. And it was from stretching. We were in a cup final and it was the last minute. It was 0-0. I lunged across, got my foot to the ball, scored the winner, but slipped two discs in the process.
Wow.
That's a blatant fucking lie. I didn't score no cup final winners, mate. I picked up the kit bag and just felt it go pop. That's all that was, honestly. I picked the kit bag up and my back went pop and I'd slipped two discs. Yeah. I'd never scored no winners in a cup final. Don't be daft.
you should have left that. It sounded cooler.
Yeah. The merit in myself picking up a bag of sweaty shirts. Yeah. Shall we talk some wrestling, mate?
Let's do it, sir.
Let's.
Hello, brother. This is NWA WCW Enhancement Talent, Randy Hogan, baby. Being in the ring with the Road Warriors, Vader, Abdullah the Butcher, Midnight Express and all them guys, let me tell you, it was dang rough. But not as rough as listening to Cyan Mags on that chain wrestling show, brother. What you gonna do when this pair of fools, Cyan Mags and chain wrestling, brother, runs wild on you?
Okay, this week, Mags' selection won yet a bloody game. wrestling Twitter doing me dirty. I'm basically going to just start changing the format. I think I'm not going to start the show anymore with welcome to chain wrestling. I'm going to be like, next week is going to be, you know, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever, whenever, etc., etc. Welcome to Let's All Watch What Mags Wants. You know, because that's the way it's been the last few weeks.
I don't know why it's like that. I really don't, because I do my best to give fairly shitty picks. I mean, I don't think this one was a particularly shitty pick. I actually enjoyed watching it. But yeah, I do try and make it worse for ourselves, but it just seems that wrestling Twitter loves to see us in pain, I suppose.
Yeah. I think last week it was because everyone loves Brad Shepherd and I upset them by slagging him off. Maybe that's what it is. We've got our listener base are full of Brad Shepherd fans. I don't know.
Or it's just Brad Shepherd a number of times.
Yeah, just Brad Shepherd making loads of fake accounts, loads of fake emails to sign up for Twitter over and over again.
Millwall Chris is Brad Shepherd in disguise. Is that what you're saying?
I'm voting for Mags. Sod side. He called me a pimple dick. I'm voting for Mags. Fuck Brad Shepherd. Mags' selection won with, I think it was 53% of the votes this week.
Very close.
Yeah, very close. Very close indeed. So we are heading back to September the 7th, 1997, in your house, the 17th in your house show, if I've worked that out correctly, entitled Ground Zero, for the main event, which wasn't actually the title match on the show, but the main event of Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker in Louisville Gardens, Louisville, Kentucky. Sounds like somewhere that would have certain restaurants where you'd be able to get plenty of lovely chipotle. I really enjoyed this match, Mags. I'm not going to lie. I thought that there can't be many Shawn Michaels matches out there that I have either not seen or don't remember seeing. But this one didn't ring a bell. I must have seen it before, but it didn't ring a bell with me. But I really enjoyed it.
I think the reason why you probably don't remember it as much is because this is what leads into the Hell in a Cell match at the next pay-per-view.
Yeah, and it was the I think I heard on the commentary the first time they've met one-on-one, these two.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was always going to be a schmoz finish because you don't give the game away on the first time of asking. You try and kind of like milk the storyline for all it's worth. And to be fair, I really enjoyed it. And so giving a little bit of the backstory, these two were at war because Sean and Brett had obviously a very, very heated rivalry, and Sean had actually cost The Undertaker the title by attacking Brett at SummerSlam 1997, which meant that The Undertaker was gunning for Shawn Michaels. And this era, this was a Shawn Michaels that was incredibly cocky, very kind of a self-assured, thought that the sun shined out of his own arse. We had a Taker who was kind of just coming out of just being the dead man and having more of a character and more of a say and getting some more promos off. It was just a really kind of well-told story. You then add the fact that Sean was setting up D-Generation X to essentially protect himself from The Undertaker, throw in a little bit Commissioner Slaughter, and you add like a whole mixing melting pot of interesting storylines that led to this match, and then essentially that led to one of the greatest Hell in a Cell gimmick style matches of all time.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of moving parts in in the WWF in 1997. I think 97 is a fantastic year in the WWF and in WCW as well. The NWO and the whole Sting storyline and everything is all guns are blazing on the other channel. But the WWF is really sort of, I suppose, trying to find its feet with the experiment of Diesel as champion, Sean as champion as a babyface, lots of different things. They've been trying the cartoony, gimmicky characters and so on. Here, it looks like they find where they want to go. You've got Steve Austin, who is, by this stage, becoming one of the most popular wrestlers in the world. The Undertaker is on top and to me, the Undertaker here in 97, he looks fantastic. He can really work. It's the first time you see him fly over the top rope, as we've seen in more recent matches of his. Bret Hart is absolutely superb as the American-hating Canadian hero, Hart Foundation leader gimmick.
Yeah, I mean, that whole Hart Foundation was one of the best at this time. Owen Hart really kind of found his voice. Instead of being Bret's younger brother, mm-hmm. he was the cocky snide heel. And even British Bulldog, this was some of his best work. I mean, I love everything that the British Bulldog's done, but this kind of like anti-American character, I thought was some of his very, very best work. I loved everything about this year. It was the most invested in wrestling that I've been, and going back and rewatching it, it really sparks them kind of memories again.
Yeah, definitely. And sort of at the top of the card, like I said, the moving parts with Bret as champion, he's just won it off the Undertaker at SummerSlam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Shawn was a part of that happening. Mm-hmm. You're ultimately going to end up with Bret defending against Shawn at Survivor Series, and we all know what happens there in Montreal. Before Austin is still hugely popular, this groundswell of support for this sort of anti-hero character of Austin, building for the Rumble in 98, which she then wins and goes on to wrestle Shawn at WrestleMania. Just so many moving parts, but they all seem to be moving in unison in the right direction. I think it's the whole period is so well booked and so well put together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and there's so many legitimate big stars who should be at the top of the card. I mean, we especially on wrestling Twitter nowadays, clamour for our favourites to be at the top. And that doesn't necessarily translate to how big of a star they are in the grand scheme of wrestling. But at this time, Undertaker, Bret Hart, Austin, Shawn Michaels were all huge, huge stars, and all them kind of in the mix for this title picture. It made for some really interesting storylines, and it's no surprise why this was one of the hottest periods that we've ever had in wrestling.
Yeah, definitely. Shawn's entrance here has to be seen to be understood. He waits and waits and waits and waits before coming out. Perhaps he was doing it intentionally to build up suspense. Perhaps mm-hmm. Sonny hadn't finished him off yet. I don't know. But he waits and waits and waits and waits before coming out. He has his little dance. But it's just so arrogant and so mm-hmm. conceited. I think he actually spits at the crowd at one stage, maybe, or mimics like he's going to or something.
And he does the DX chop to quite a few of the crowd and singles people out. It got to a point where he took his time so much that they had to restart his music because mm-hmm. they'd gone through the whole track, which you very rarely happen. And that was actually really jarring because it doesn't flow straight into itself. It's literally a dead stop and then restart. He was at his smarmy, smarmy best. The issue being, we now know that this wasn't a character, this was him being this person.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I recommend, I mean, I hope that when people listen to the show, they've gone back on the WWE Network or wherever they find their wrestling and had a little look at the matches we're going to discuss, just so they can kind of follow along. If not, I strongly suggest you go back and have a little look at Shawn Michaels' entrance here, because there's so many stories about his attitude in this period.
Yeah.
And obviously the whole Montreal thing and the way he was behaving contributed hugely to that. This one little snippet here, this entrance by Shawn Michaels here, is just like a little window into that to see exactly how this guy was. I mean, his pyro is late going off behind him when he does his sort of bicep pose. And he reacts with that and plays along with that. I think, yes, arrogant, yes, conceited, yes, smarmy, yes, you want to punch him in the frickin' face. But oh my God, this guy is so good at just being a dick.
Yeah, he absolutely had the it factor. And we can debate his backstage politics all day long, but when it came to being in front of the cameras, he was money. it was absolute money. He knew how to play his role to perfection.
Exactly. The match starts with Shawn Michaels effectively hiding behind the ref for quite a bit and running away. And again, it's just, I think Shawn is...
Poor Matt Chioda.
Oh, yeah. I think my opinions and thoughts on Shawn Michaels are quite well known if you've heard me on any of the chain wrestling shows, my other shows, wherever. Shawn is, or was, my guy. I thought he was superb. He, as a heel... In the early 90s, I thought this guy looked cool. I had no fashion taste. I didn't know what the hell I was looking at. He had a blonde mullet and a white leather jacket, and I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. You know, it was the comeback. Shawn was my guy. He's my favourite of all time, along with Ric Flair. Just absolutely think Shawn is superb. Here, I think he is fantastic. Yeah. The way that he sells for The Undertaker, the way he's running from The Undertaker and hiding behind the ref, which forces the referee then to, sorry, the forces The Undertaker just to punch the ref in the chops to get him out of the way, which was great. I enjoyed that. And then he uses the referee as well, doesn't he, The Undertaker? He uses the referee as a weapon and throws him at Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, that's after Shawn Michaels has said to Vince McMahon, I'm done. Look what's just happened. I'm not having this match. I'm going. And then he gets to the entrance ramp, and Commissioner Slaughter is there, and he's essentially forcing Shawn Michaels back into the ring, which I thought was a brilliant twist. It kind of reminded me of a recent episode of Grilling with JR, where he mentioned about Jerry Lawler being able to get a 45-minute match out of essentially doing the bare minimum. And for the first 10 minutes, or maybe 10 minutes is a stretch, but for the opening few minutes, there is no contact between the two, but you are literally at the edge of your seat because of how well the two wrestlers are telling a story of Shawn being a coward and Undertaker baying for Shawn's blood.
Yeah, exactly. It's done so well. Eventually, Undertaker catches up with Shawn, and they sort of fight around the outside for quite a while, Max, don't they? Around the announce tables and up towards the entrance way, or what, the sort of in your house set, which I'm a big fan of. I really like the look of that. You know.
Yeah. It throws him into the plant pots.
Yeah. That was something else as well. Watching this back earlier, when there's like a couple of plants and whatnot in front of the window, isn't there? And he throws Shawn into there. And I made a Holy Grail, Monty Python Holy Grail reference, and went, a shrubbery, you know, thinking I was the funniest guy in the world. And my wife looked at me like I had two heads. She's like, what are you on about? What are you talking about? You know, if you haven't seen a Holy Grail Monty Python film, go and watch it, just so if I make that joke in the future, you'll know why I'm funny.
Yeah. You could be it's one of the cool kids.
The first of what seems like a never-ending supply of replacement referees eventually arrives.
Good old Hebner, I believe, was the second one. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, yeah. And again, Shawn here is superb. When he arrives, he's begging Earl Hebner. He's on his knees, climbing up Hebner's shirt, trying to get him to just not start the match or end the match or disqualify The Undertaker. He just wants no part of this at all. And the fact that he's so cocky and so arrogant in his little interview before the match, and then his entrance is exactly that as well. And now the bell's rang, or now the match is like, well the fight is underway. He's behaving in this manner. Is just so good, and the crowd are lapping it up at this stage, Max, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. They were on fire for it. I mean, it was a relatively small arena, but yeah, the crowd was absolutely hot for this, and they had absolutely every right to be so hot because it was so entertaining. You could see how Shawn's antics were pissing The Undertaker off more and more, to the point of him wanting to absolutely rip Shawn Michaels limb from limb. And there's a point where he essentially does try to do that. He gets hold of Shawn's arm, and he's lifting him up by the arm and slamming him down by the arm. Mm-hmm. And how his shoulder stayed attached was beyond me. He really gave him a beating with that arm.
Yeah. I mean, I think Lawler actually says on commentary, doesn't he? He's trying to rip off Sean's arm and beat him to death.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. But then when the match actually officially starts, I guess, Sean kind of takes control for a few minutes, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, I think is brilliant storytelling. It's really well done.
Yeah, and he uses the same kind of tactics where he hides behind the referee, and when he spots an opening, he takes out the Undertaker's knee, which works. And once you've got Undertaker grounded, you're taking away the biggest part of his arsenal. It's just unfortunately for Sean, he wasn't able to keep him down for long periods of time. But we see like the kind of the calling cards of Shawn Michaels. We get the flying elbow and attempts at sweet chin music and stuff like that until it starts to get schmozzy a little bit when we see Rick Rude making his way down and he tosses some brass knuckles to Shawn Michaels.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, first of all, that top rope elbow by Shawn Michaels is so good, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love watching Shawn.
Arguably. Top three in top rope elbows for me. I think my favorite is probably Kairi Sane. Then the classic Macho Man, and then probably Shawn Michaels.
See, I think Shawn's top for me, mate.
Oh well, you're biased. So
oh yeah, I am biased because I love Shawn Michaels. But the thing that I took away from this is when he climbs up the Undertaker is on the mat, obviously in position to take the top rope elbow. When Shawn goes through the ropes and starts climbing up the turnbuckle, I'm looking and I'm thinking he's going to the wrong corner, isn't he? Because he looks like he's going to a corner further away than he needs to be. It's quite a distance.
Mm-hmm.
From that corner to where the Undertaker is, and I'm thinking, oh, is he actually going to make that? And he does, and I think it's that. It looked brilliant. I thought
it did, yeah, absolutely did.
Yeah, and then Rude arrives, and we have the brass knucks. But Taker kicks out after Sean's hit him with the knuckle duster to quite a good reaction from the crowd, which then leads Shawn Michaels to kick another referee because why the hell not? You know.
And then we get Triple H and China coming down, who they bring a referee of their own to help out, which still doesn't get the pin for Shawn Michaels.
No.
And then to add stank to that, Triple H is obviously not happy with that referee for not getting the three count, so he decks that referee. So that's what, 3-4 referees now been brought into the match, and all of them have took a whooping.
Yeah. I mean, Sean is obviously the Undertaker is this big, almighty, strong, powerful character. Just lost the world title. Top of his game, really, I suppose, in 97. Sean's selling the fear and the power of the Undertaker so well, he needs to get what eventually becomes D-Generation X, doesn't it? Very, very, very soon. Yeah. In Rude, Triple H and China down to help him out. He brings his friends down because he obviously can't get the job done on his own. Kind of similar, Mags, to Hulk Hogan, who couldn't get the job done on his own at WrestleMania 7. So he called in his friends, the Ultimate Warrior, to help him save the world in SummerSlam 91.
You prematurely ejaculated there, sir.
Maybe one day we'll talk about that. That wonderful star and a quarter match. Well, a little bit more of referee bashing we have, because Sean ends up helping Earl Hebner up, doesn't he? I'm thinking, okay, good move, Sean. You want to win the match, you need a referee. That's sensible, isn't it? You know, so he's helping Earl Hebner up. He's dusting him down. He's checking him, making sure he's okay. And he just literally wangs him into the turnbuckles.
That was brilliant. It was. Yeah. I love that. Mrs. Mags was over my shoulder watching it whilst it happened, and God love her. She's not a huge wrestling fan, but she knows the big players, and she was providing commentary that only a non wrestling fan can give. And she was saying, "Why has he done that? That's ridiculous. You need that referee. That referee is there to help you win the match." And I'm like, "Oh, you poor innocent lamb. Do you not know that this is scripted?"
You poor innocent lamb. You have lamb with petite peas, don't you?
Well, yeah, we do.
The Undertaker then gets hold of the knuckle duster, or the brass knucks, or however you want to describe it, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, just before we get there, there is one point that tends to happen every time we get a Shawn Michaels match. We get a bit of Shawn Michaels' arse.
Yeah.
When Undertaker drags him back in the ring by his tarts, which Mrs. Mags again rather enjoyed that part. But yeah, then we get Taker reaching into Shawn Michaels' tarts for those knuckle dusters, clocks Shawn Michaels with him. Still doesn't get the pin.
No, he reached inside Michaels' tights there and he had to push aside Sonny's false nails that she'd left down there.
Brave time to put your hand down Shawn Michaels' pants. That's like Chlamydia City.
Chlamydia City. I think that's just outside Treadworth in Gloucester. It's just down the road from me. It's just the other side of the estate. I mean, Undertaker uses the knuckle duster and Shawn barely kicks out of that, doesn't he?
And the worst, I mean, I understand Earl was selling being thrown into a turnbuckle, but it was the worst slow three count known to man. He counts the one with one arm, kind of like stumbles and nearly falls over, even though he's on his hands and knees anyway. Gets the two with the other arm, and then goes back to the original arm for the three, giving Shawn ample time to be able to kick out. He could have kicked out three or four times by the time Earl did this count, and for that, he received a chokeslam for being a slow counter.
Yeah, another referee. I mean, I believe what we are now, 46, 47 referees have been butchered in this contest. And yet the match still carries on until our 49th referee, or whatever it is at this stage, Jim White, I think his name is.
Tim White,
yeah, sorry.
The referee that tried to kill himself multiple times in the lunchtime suicides.
People talk about that, and I must have seen it before. And if I go back and watch it, it'll probably remind me. But off the top of my head, I can't remember those. But I hear people talking about it. I'm going to have to check it out, I think. It's not very tasteful, from what I can gather.
I mean, you don't. He clearly doesn't kill himself. But they're funny. They are hilarious. Josh Matthews plays his part really well. I think you can find there's like a compilation video of them all on YouTube. So, yeah, stick it in your YouTube search machine and look for the lunchtime suicides and you'll find them there. One of my favourites is when he tries to kill himself with rat poison.
Right.
And then falls off his chair.
Okay. I'll have a look for it. I'll check it out later. Tim White basically waves it off at this stage, doesn't he? He's decided enough's enough.
Yeah.
With China, Rude, Triple H, all the fighting on the outside, 48 referees being murdered by various competitors, chair shots, Shawn at one stage having hold of the ring bell, brass knuckles. Tim White decided, you know what? I think this is enough now. We're probably going to stop it.
It was brave of him because he stayed in the ring as well, even after he called the match off, knowing that a lot of his work colleagues have been filled in. He decided to stick it out and get the bell rung a couple of times. And then we get, obviously, all the officials who come out, which is a regular thing in WWE. And then you see something that you don't see a lot of. It's the actual wrestlers come out to kind of, like, stop Undertaker from being able to attack what would become DX. It was really weird seeing the Sultan, who obviously is Rikishi, in his mask, but wearing a tracksuit. That really kind of threw me. I mean, I remember it, obviously, but, yeah, seeing it again, it's like, it's a weird visual seeing Rikishi with his leather mask and a multicolored bright tracksuit.
Yeah, but that's what they should be doing. I'm a firm believer that if you wear a mask in wrestling, you should wear it all the time. You know, so like you're popping out down the shop to get a pint of milk, you should wear your mask. Yeah. That's the way it should be. Kane, right now, I'm disgusted that he's not, you know, mayor of Knoxville or whatever it is, wearing a mask. He should be, because that's his gimmick. You know, I don't care. And it's not for your career. It's for life. Masks are for life. You know,
not just for pandemics.
That's right. Yeah. I've got a note here that I forget how much it annoys me until I come across it each time that it happens. And that's when you're getting these kind of pull apart brawls or these segments after matches where the fighting's continued or someone's getting attacked and they keep ringing the bell.
Mm-hmm. Like it makes the blandest bit of difference.
Yeah, like all of a sudden that they're ringing the bell and everyone's just going to go, oh shit, bell's ringing. Okay,
sorry, boss.
Everyone just take a deep breath and chill out. All right, take a step back and count to 10. You know, it's just stupid. It's just an unnecessary noise. And I don't know why, but it really gets me cross. and then we see Flying Undertaker for what I think was the first time.
Yeah, and wow, did he pull off this no hands plancher to perfection. Wiped out everybody. I mean, we see this kind of move on the daily now in wrestling, so it's not as spectacular as it was back then, but a guy of almost 7 foot, 300-odd pounds, to have that kind of agility, and he didn't just clear the top rope. He certainly didn't do a Drew McIntyre where he strummed the top rope with his man parts. Taker cleared it by a long, long way and wiped out the heels. It was a brilliant, brilliant thing to watch.
Yeah, it's always incredible, isn't it? I love The Undertaker. He's freaking brilliant.
Yeah.
And that's basically the end, Max, isn't it? That's kind of where the show goes off the air. I overall really enjoyed this. We normally give these things a rating out of 10. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I really, really enjoyed it. And even though it was quite clear that this was going to be kind of the setup to Bad Blood, which would be coming up the month after and the Hell in a Cell, I still think this stands up now as a really, really good contest. And we've watched a lot of kind of older wrestling, which in today's eyes doesn't really stand up as well as it should. But I think if you had this match in this timeline now, I think it'd still stand up really, really well. And for the fact that I loved it at the time and I still feel the same now, I've got to give this a fairly high rating. It wasn't a technically brilliant match. There was a lot of smodges to the point of almost being too much, but I think it was done just enough. It kind of just skated the line for me that there was just enough kind of like shenanigans that it didn't ruin the match. So for all those reasons, I'm quite happy to give this a 7.5.
Okay. That's a smidge higher than what I was going to give it. I've got 7 written down here. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Shawn Michaels' performance. I thought he made The Undertaker look absolutely superb with his own sort of fear of The Undertaker, I guess. The Undertaker looked incredible himself, pulling off the moves he was doing and obviously capitalizing on the way Shawn was selling and so on. Really, really good action. Really good stuff. Kept me entertained from the moment it started until the end. The finish, obviously we know now in hindsight why that finish was the way it was, because we're heading to Hell in a Cell and the debut of Kane and all those fun and games. But still, to me, if there's no finish on a wrestling match I'm watching as a one-off, I do have to take a little bit off for that. Okay, because I want to see a conclusive winner. So I think a 7 is pretty fair from my end, my friend.
Seems fair to me. I mean, we're not that far off in terms of ratings anyway, so
no, there we go. I suppose the next step then is to see where the next link in the chain takes us. I ask every week and it's the same every week, but I will continue to. Mr. Mags, do you want to go first or second, my friend?
I'll go first.
Okay.
So we just discussed Ground Zero, which was like I think you mentioned, it was the 17th in your house kind of a group of, I suppose, B pay per views, kind of like outside the big five, big six pay per views that WWE had every year, and kind of like going into the pay per view per month kind of model.
Yeah, this one went into 3 hours, didn't it? Because the In Your House shows, initially were like, they were cheaper and they were only like 2 hours, weren't they?
Yeah.
But this is where they're going to 3 hours on a regular basis, and they eventually just get away with it and turn them into a regular pay-per-view every month, don't they, I think?
Yeah, well, they start taking the In Your House kind of subtitle, and that ends up being smaller and smaller on the promo posters. Instead of it being In Your House, call on whatever the name is, it starts being the name of the show, call on In Your House. So they're kind of like transitioning out of the In Your House brand. But that that brand still had a little bit of legs in it. And in fact, it went well into the next year. So we get to September of 1998, and we've still got the In Your House brand going. But this time we haven't got Ground Zero. We've got In Your House Breakdown, which is kind of built around DX. Obviously, with the song Break It Down. And on this card, there's actually quite a few decentest matches. You've got a triple threat steel cage match to determine the number one contender for the WWF title between The Rock, Ken Shamrock, and Mankind. You've got DX beating Jeff Jarrett and Southern Justice in a six man, but I'm going again to go with the main event, and I'm going to go with the Kane versus Stone Cold versus The Undertaker in a triple threat for the WWF title in a match where The Undertaker and Kane were banned from pinning each other. And if anybody interfered on Stone Cold's behalf, Stone Cold would be immediately stripped of the title. So that's the match I'm going for. Kane versus The Undertaker versus the Stone Cold from Breakdown 1998.
Okay, good shout. Some three really big names in WWF history, and at that time, huge main eventers all in the same contest. Yeah, so
correct.
Yeah, great shout. I've gone a slightly different direction. the show that we just watched, the match from the show we just watched, wasn't the title match, despite going on last. This apparently upset Bret Hart a little bit, and he had a little whinge and a moan about it, as Bret Hart tends to do. I love Bret Hart, but the more you hear about him around this time period, the more you realise he was a little bit of a whingy bitch. But anyway, he was wrestling Del Wilkes, the Patriot, for the WWF title. And that was just before the Shawn Michaels Undertaker match we're talking about today. The Patriot is really interesting to me. The fact that he's in the WWF here, he's using Kurt Angle's music. Obviously, it was his music first, don't get me wrong, but it ends up being Kurt Angle's music. Yeah. He's a masked wrestler in very much a sort of luchador style mask, but he's covered in the USA colors and so on. And he spent most of his time wrestling in Japan and smaller companies dotted around. But he had a great look. A pretty good gimmick, I suppose. Maybe a touch dated, but a pretty good gimmick as well. He was pretty decent in the ring also. So the Patriot, for me, his whole career, especially the drug addiction and so on as well, I think it's a really interesting story. Also in the Patriot's career, he was actually the first TV world champion, I believe the title is called. I'll have to look that up, for the Global Wrestling Federation. A company which ran for a few years in the early 90s, had some shows with the USWA, ran by Eddie Gilbert, I think. Bruce Pritchard was involved down there for a very short time when he was been sacked on one of the multiple occasions by the WWF. Mm-hmm. And you had all sorts of wrestlers go through there. Mick Foley went through there. Steve Austin went through there. Jarrett was really prominent there. I thought, just as a complete change of pace, Mags, that we would have a look at a match from the Global Wrestling Federation, with the Patriot being the link, because he was quite a mainstay in the early years of that company and the first TV champion. Okay. It's on the network. It's May the 6th, 1991. In the territories tab and so on, find the GWF, Global Wrestling Federation, May 6th, 1991 on the network. And it's a Tennessee street fight between Jeff Jarrett and Robert Fuller. And they are facing Stunning Steve Austin and Dr. Tom Pritchard. I've never seen this before. I'm not sure how many people listening will have seen this, but I thought it's just a little change of pace. We popped into ECW. The chain sort of took us through ECW a couple of weeks back. We're back with WWF, WCW in recent times. I thought, let's have a little look at something completely left-wing, something completely out there that we've not ventured to before. So using the Patriot from the same In Your House show as the match we've just watched as our link, we're going to go back to 1991, May the 6th, episode of Global Wrestling Federation TV, and Jeff Jarrett with Robert Fuller versus Steve Austin and Dr. Tom Pritchard in a Tennessee street fight.
Interesting. Appealing to maybe the more hardcore wrestling fans of our listener base.
It doesn't matter anyway. They're going to vote for you.
I was just going to say, I wonder how close you'll get to still being second place with that.
Yeah.
That's so arrogant. That's horribly arrogant.
That's Shawn Michaels' level of arrogance.
Vote for Simon's now on purpose for me being that arrogant.
No, I mean, that's the thing as well. It's great. Sort of, I never know what you're going to put forward. We never discussed this ahead of time. I never know what you're going to put forward, so I never know what my pick is going up against. So sometimes when you put your pick forward, I'm like, oh, Streif, I'd actually rather watch that than my own one. You know, so
I'm absolutely the same with your picks.
So, yeah, there we go. Those are your choices. We have the main event from the September 1998 In Your House Breakdown show. Kane versus The Undertaker versus Steve Austin in a triple threat match for the WWF title. We have numerous added stipulations there too, sort of very much stacking the deck against Steve Austin here. Mm-hmm. Or we have the Tennessee street fight from Global Wrestling Federation, May the 6th, 1991 episode between Jeff Jarrett and Robert Fuller. And they are facing Stunning Steve Austin and Dr. Tom Pritchard. The poll, as always, will be up within an hour to a day of the show being released by the wonderful people at the network that do that for us. Mags, I suppose the only thing left now is for you to let everyone know whereabouts they can find you online.
Okay, so you can find me on the Twitters at DJ Kirby, where I am currently whinging and mourning about the death of football. So join in, mock me for it, because I probably deserve it. But yeah, follow me on Twitter, it's always a good time.
Okay, you can find me at SJP Words, and you can find the show at Chain_Wrestling, where you can listen to our episodes and vote in the polls, and also look out for our non-wrestling topic of the week, I suppose, at Chain_Wrestling. I'm off now to buy some chipotle sauce to eat with my petite peas. So, Magsy, I will speak to you next week, my friend.
Pop puree.